Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Thursday. It's December 13th, 2018, week 15. It's crazy that we're already 14 weeks through with the NFL season. Week 15 is coming up, final 3 weeks of the NFL year. Great game coming up tonight with the Chiefs and Chargers. Today we're going to talk to a couple of people about what happened in week 14 and the repercussions of what happened in week 14. And obviously, in many ways, the biggest story coming out of week 14 was what happened in Minnesota, where the Vikings were a mess against the Seahawks. Afterwards, they fire their offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, replaced him with quarterbacks coach Kevin Stefanski. A very interesting change just late in the season. And joining us to discuss that and all things Vikings is our reporter for ESPN, Courtney Cronin. Courtney, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. I have had a much quieter week than you, I feel like. You had a late game, of course, on Monday, and then total chaos, it seems like, over the ensuing couple days with the Vikings, of course, firing John DeFilippo, their offensive coordinator. So let's just start there. In terms of the actual act happening, in terms of DeFilippo getting fired, I mean, are you surprised? Would you have been surprised if I told you it was going to happen 2 weeks ago, a month ago, 2 months ago? Like, was there a point where you felt like it made sense? Or what were your thoughts on the DeFilippo firing in general?
The writing's been on the wall for a while. I mean, right around midseason when they put up 37 points on the road to the Jets, and Mike Zimmer saying after that win, I wish we would have run the ball more. Mm-hmm. That to me indicates, okay, there's a blip in the philosophy agreement between head coach and offensive coordinator. So, and I mean, that was a game too where they were so bad on third down that I could understand the frustrations from Zimmer, but not, you know, seeing the offense put up that many points didn't change his mind that he felt that it should have been done differently. So from that point on, I mean, you come out of that Bears loss and Zimmer saying there's too much volume in the playbook. And then, you know, beyond that, the balance argument and saying that, you know, still saying, hey, we need to run the ball more. We need to run the ball more in the red zone, et cetera, et cetera. That you felt the tension rising there, that he wasn't happy with the way things were transpiring with his offense. And I'm not surprised at the timing. I mean, it is very precarious timing to fire your offensive coordinator with three games left. I mean, you can look at this from a number of different lenses. You know, the first one being, okay, Mike Zimmer said he didn't like the direction the offense was going the last 4 to 5 games, and that he felt he had to do something, shake it up, to salvage the season. So that's one thing. But also, firing your offensive coordinator with three games remaining, and right now you're in the sixth seed for the playoffs, the NFC playoff picture. If he gets this turnaround, and they make the playoffs, and then, you know, if they can win a playoff game, this could, you know, for a guy like Mike Zimmer, this looks like a great leadership type move that he was able to find what he thought was the problem, fix the problem, and get this team to the playoffs. I don't know if I buy, like, it's going to be, I think this is putting a Band-Aid on a much larger issue with the offense, in my opinion. I think this is, you know, you had to do something. I understand that. But I don't know if this was the end-all, be-all that's going to solve all of their problems. But truth be told, it will look like that from a, you know, perception standpoint if they are able to go 3-0 here, or even 2-1, and still make the playoffs somehow and, you know, get to the postseason, which I think they would have done anyway.
Do you think Zimmer is making this move in part considering that perception problem, or do you think that's just sort of a side effect of the move he thinks is correct to move on from his offensive coordinator?
Well, I'm certain that he feels the pressure that the rest of the team does, and, you know, from the head coach standpoint, if you're harping on the fact that, you know, you have a volume problem, you have a balance problem, you have a running the ball problem, but the head coach, the buck stops with you. You need to take care of it. You need to make the decision to turn whatever you want turned around, turn it around. So I think that he felt that type of pressure of, hey, if I'm talking the talk, I got to walk the walk in a way. And in his mind, doing that would be firing his offensive coordinator and making a change where he felt they just weren't performing to the expectations he wanted them to.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It seems like that's the case. And I mean, in terms of whether DeFilippo deserved this, I mean, obviously it seems like, you know, to some extent, the like you said, it's a bigger picture issue. But do you think he could have done a significantly better job given the offensive line and the players he has to work with right now?
I think there's for both. I, you know, some of I think it's, you have to be objective when you look at play calling and wondering, okay, what happened here? What was the breakdown? I mean, sure, there were a few third downs on Monday night when they go 2 for 10, and both of those on their 8 dropbacks that they had, they did not complete a pass. Is that play calling? Is that Kirk Cousins? I think it's both. And then, you know, when you're inside Seattle's 4-yard line, you try to pound the ball in twice by running up the middle. When they're sitting, you know, 8 or 9 down there, that's, you know, of course, play calling is going to come into effect on that and come into question. But when Kirk Cousins is turning around because he's sensing, you know, in a way, phantom pressure is what it looked like, you know, and turning around and dumping the ball off to Latavius Murray for 2 yards when he's got a wide open Adam Thielen 20 yards downfield, or when, you know, they're inside that 4-yard line and third down, on fourth down when he hits Kyle Rudolph in the back of the end zone into double coverage, which the week before he said he was, you know, talking about kind of what happened against the Patriots, saying, I'm not going to throw in a double coverage. Well, you did it right there in the back of the end zone, which I understand least defended place in football, but you're still throwing in a double coverage when you have Adam Thielen to your left and his defender fell down.
Right.
That's not on play calling, in my opinion. That's on the quarterback to be able to execute those reads and, you know, not panic under pressure, which, yes, Kirk has been under pressure this entire season. His offensive line is not good. And in a lot of respects, that has nothing to do with play calling. That has nothing to do with Kirk Cousins. That has to do with the front office for putting them in this position. But they weren't able to compensate for that, to find workarounds, which I think is where they really struggled. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, you know, you play to the strengths of your playmakers. And they did, by and large, but those last 5 weeks where they get the win against Green Bay, I mean, even before that they beat Detroit, but kind of were playing prevent, on offense in a way, because defense playing so great that game. You've got an injured Adam Thielen, and you know, you're without Stephon Diggs. There were ways, I think, that they might have been able to work around it before, but certainly does not all fall on play calling, in my opinion.
All right, well, we'll get back to Courtney and the Vikings here in a moment. But first, let's talk about our pals at ZipRecruiter. And I got to admit, I mean, you got to put 2 and 2 together. You know where I'm going with this. The Vikings hired John DeFilippo this offseason. It didn't work out. Obviously, I think he's going to be fine. He's still getting paid rest of his contract. I think he's going to do just fine, get a job elsewhere, could go back to Philadelphia. He's going to be in great shape. The Vikings, they might have considered a different process for hiring an offensive coordinator this offseason, because after they got rid of Pat Shurmur, what they did not work out. And I don't know how they did it. Maybe they hired a search firm. Maybe they just talked to some pals within the league. I think they should have used ZipRecruiter, because ZipRecruiter, it's not just going to get you a ton of resumes. That's a waste of time and a waste of your time, a waste of their time, a waste of the people whose resumes are sent in, their time. They're going to get you the right skills and the right experience on the right resumes. They're going to save you time, and they're going to get the right people to apply for your job. It's incredible. You don't have to go out and find qualified candidates. You don't have to watch tape. ZipRecruiter is going to find those candidates for you and then actively invite them to apply for your job. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., which is rated on hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, if you happen to be in the market for a NFL coach, perhaps a positional coach of some nature, just want to try ZipRecruiter for your company that has nothing to do with football, well, you can do that for free by going to this exclusive web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, my last name, Barnwell. If you happen to really enjoy the Bill Barnwell Show, one of the best things you can do to show your support is go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. Check out there, post your job, and I will happily recommend that you use ZipRecruiter. So again, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show. You know, it seems like Kirk Cousins, it's so weird to say because this is a guy who's making $28 million a year. I certainly envy him from that perspective. But in terms of, you know, the situation he is in, where he took over for a 13-3 team that, you know, was very successful last year, almost made it to the Super Bowl, came within one game of making the Super Bowl. Kirk Cousins, is there a level of play he could have had this year that was anything short of MVP caliber play that would have justified, you know, how much money he made to the fans, or was going to prevent him from coming in for any criticism if the Vikings did struggle on offense?
Well, you know, the day they signed him, that $84 million figure sparked the Super Bowl or bust conversation, mm-hmm. which I think is absolutely ludicrous. Mm-hmm. I don't think, I've never bought into that. I think you have a Super Bowl window for sure. Mm-hmm. You have to win a Super Bowl. You have to at least get to the Super Bowl in the time of his first contract. Otherwise, I think you have a completely justified conversation for that being deemed one of the biggest failures in free agent signing history. And, you know, certainly for a team, you know, this could go down if that is the case. Mm-hmm. This could go down as like the worst signing since Herschel Walker. So, I mean, I do think that this type of situation, Kirk was only set up for failure in a way mm-hmm. because of the expectations, but also, you know, I've been pounding my fist on the table about this and pretty much everything I'd written since, you know, the day he was signed, mm-hmm. because a few weeks later, Joe Berger, his right guard, retired.
Right.
And the Vikings didn't address in my opinion, they didn't address the offensive line until it was too late. Mm-hmm. They're very lucky that Brian O'Neill is performing at the level he's doing now, but he wasn't always like that. He was their worst offensive lineman for quite some time. But you accept that with a rookie who's a project and at least a year away of having to play. Mm-hmm. But to me, they knew what they were getting because at no point in his career as a starter from 2015 on had Kirk continuously and on a regular basis been able to elevate the rest of his team. Mm-hmm. He performed very well in Washington in 2016, which, you know, a year they missed the playoffs. And, yeah, he had like the 25th ranked defense that year. Mm-hmm. So everything was great on offense, but he wasn't able to elevate his team on the level of just, you know, offensively, like, or, you know, defensively what they had to deal with. Mm-hmm. But every piece around him that year is just as good as it is in Minnesota, in my opinion, with the Vikings, except for the offensive line. Mm-hmm. You have Trent Williams, who's your left tackle, Pro Bowl left tackle, playing, you know, is graded, I think, the highest offensive lineman, regardless of position that year. Mm-hmm. And the rest of your offensive line was incredibly good. It bought him time, made him a great play-action quarterback. Mm-hmm. And those pieces, since he's missing that element here in Minnesota, he's playing at the level he is because of that.
Mm-hmm. So let's say they don't sign Kirk Cousins. Let's say they pocket the money, they re-sign Case Keenum, they give him the same contract the Broncos gave Case Keenum this year. Do you think the Vikings are going through the same issues on offense as they are with Cousins?
No, for the fact that you could have taken some of that money and you could have spent $10 million each on two different offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. You could have gone after Josh Sitton, who was a hot name early on. You could have, you know, found ways to bolster your offensive line mm-hmm. and, you know, have that sort of depth because, you know, you would have had money. I think it comes down to financials, like it always does. And, you know, would they have the same record they do right now? Maybe, because you're looking at, you know, essentially a first-place schedule mm-hmm. where they had to play so many difficult road games, and they had such a tough stretch, Chicago game through the Seattle game, and now it obviously will get a little bit easier mm-hmm. With Miami at Detroit and then probably, you know, a C-squad Bears team that won't be worrying about positioning and can rest some of their guys. Who knows if Khalil Mack plays in that game.
Right.
But, you know, would they be – I think they would have at least the same record right now with Case Keenum that they did – that they do with Kirk Cousins if he was still here. Because the offensive line is probably not an issue because you're able to, you know, have pieces that you couldn't afford in free agency mm-hmm. this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think now that they've made the change, now that they replaced DeFilippo with Kevin Stefanski, who's been there – for years in different roles and now is going to be the offensive coordinator. Do you think the offense does dramatically change versus the offense we've seen over the first 14 weeks of the year?
I think it's too little too late mm-hmm. to do any sort of widespread changes offensively. I could see some concepts from Pat Shermer's playbook popping up here. I asked, you know, we talked to Mike Zimmer about it. I asked Pat Elflein about it yesterday. Just in terms of, you know, he said they want to be more balanced. And as an offensive lineman, of course, they want to run the ball. So I could see them activating the screen game a little bit more, whether it's running back screens or even wide receiver screens, using a lot more motion, mm-hmm. Things like that that made them successful last year. Because this is Kevin's first time as a play caller, right. So we're going to get a taste of what he's wanting to do based off, you know, is he pulling from guys that he's worked under in Minnesota? I mean, he's been here. He's the longest tenured staff member they have. been here 13 seasons, been under a host of different offensive coordinators, and especially in the last few years, you know, Mike Zimmer's gone through offensive coordinators pretty quickly. He's onto his fourth since 2016 when Norv Turner resigned. So I could see Kevin Stefanski implementing some things that he learned under the guys that he's worked with before, certainly. But I don't think that, you know, as Kirk Cousins said yesterday, they're not going to all of a sudden be a zone read team that's running it all the time or doing a ton of trick plays. I mean, this is a team that's dropped back on 69% of its plays. It's fourth most in the NFL. Do I think that that number probably evens out a little bit? Yeah, I do, because that's a focus. That's a focal point for Mike Zimmer this season, that they want to run the ball more. And you'd have to think that in trusting Kevin Stefanski to run your offense, that he's going to do what the head coach says.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my question for you is now, with regards to Zimmer, of course, we think about the 2016 season where they did struggle. At the end of the year, you had members of that defensive secondary just straight up ignoring his instructions on the field and changing the way they were going to cover guys for a half. 2017, of course, you know, great season. Seemed like everyone was on the same page, and now we're seeing those sort of struggles in 2018. Do you think that Zimmer is a particularly hard person to work with in terms of whether you're the coaching staff, whether you're his players? I mean, do you think he has been sort of thorny to deal with from their perspective? And then do you think that this materially changes the way people are going to view Zimmer as a, you know, as a head coach?
Well, I think there's something to be said about the fact that he's onto his fourth OC since 2016, with two of those being mid-season departures. You know, Norv Turner has not talked about Minnesota much, and he's been asked about it. And I think that that is a story that plays to a much bigger issue that, you know, who knows? I mean, John DeFilippo, I think, did what he could and felt the pressure to, ever since week seven, felt the pressure to start running the ball more, running what Mike Zimmer wanted. But, I mean, Zimmer is a defensive guy. There's, you know, he's the last head coach in the NFL to call defensive plays. And there's a part of me that believes that, you know, the identity of this football team, he wants the defense is going to win games. He wants your offense to maintain, to, you know, to control the clock, to pull out stops, or, you know, essentially to pull out what they need to when they, you know, to support the defense, to run the ball, take the pressure off the defense, and not really do much more than that. I mean, I think that there's something to be said about Teddy Bridgewater and why Mike Zimmer loved him so much, not just as a person. I mean, that was certainly, that's been talked about it like all the time, but the way Teddy played, he would be willing to sit back there and take the sack and not run much risk, in the sense of he was, you know, he's really good as an intermediate passer. He wasn't, you know, much of a deep ball threat, but it did just enough to keep the Vikings in games, to win on offense when they needed to, but they were never going to like change that identity of the team where they all of a sudden became, you know, an offensive powerhouse. I mean, this was still, I mean, for a defensive guy who calls the shots, that's what it, that's his prerogative. And I think that that's what we're seeing here in terms of some of the philosophical differences he's had with coordinators in the past. And that needs to be part of this conversation long-term as far as Mike Zimmer's leadership. I mean, Mike saying that he's going to take more of an involved role in the offense, I mean, that could lead to disaster. It really could. You kind of hope that, you know, if you're a Vikings fan, that he's leading this up to the guys that he entrusts to call plays, to install an offense that's going to work and execute within the restrictions you do have with some of your personnel, but also kind of be a little bit more hands-off with that. I mean, certainly, you want him to not just be like, okay, offense, you do you. We're going to do us on defense, and we're going to win the game. But there is, you know, in my mind, I think his leadership will be tested the heaviest of his career throughout these next three games and what the Vikings are able to do. And, you know, if they get to the playoffs, it's a matter of, you know, it's not just a matter of getting the playoffs, it's a matter of actually winning a game in the playoffs. And right now you're going to Chicago January 6th and having to do that, and that's no easy task.
Yeah, absolutely not. And of course, you think about Zimmer's relationship with this front office. Well, the front office obviously played a big role in signing Kirk Cousins and moving on from Case Keenum. And Kirk Cousins is playing, as Mike Sando, our colleague, pointed out, just about as well as you would have expected in terms of his numbers. I mean, numbers aren't the whole story, but there's certainly a relatively similar production. It's like he's dropped off dramatically at the very least. And then you're hearing, you know, reports that the front office was heavily involved with the decision to hire DeFilippo as OC. I mean, is this sign of dissension and frustration between Zimmer and his front office? And is that something that is new to the organization?
Well, I think that there's, you know, Mike Zimmer saying what he said the other day about, like, I hired John DeFilippo. You know, I feel a sense of responsibility that it didn't work out. I mean, Rick Spielman, let's not get that twisted. Rick Spielman was heavily involved. This was not a, you know, Zimmer's the one who fired him. So I reported the other day that was Zimmer's call. That was not Rick Spielman's call. But Rick Spielman was heavily involved in the hiring process here. I mean, there's a reason Kevin Stefanski was the leading candidate for this job for a while. And then they're like, all right, let's pause on that. Like, we've got a young, talented offensive mind who's coaching a Super Bowl right now. We want to, like, feel him out first, but we want to still get a chance to interview him. Mm-hmm. So, and that's front office. That is Rick Spielman, and he was responsible for this hire too. And I don't think Rick Spielman wanted John DeFilippo to go. I think that he was very much in favor of, you know, keeping this thing the way it was. But at the end of the day, you have a coach who's in his second contract. He gets control of his staff. So I think the bigger point there, I'm kind of forgetting your question because I'm literally bleary-eyed right now. So help me out here. What was the part that I'm not answering?
Just in terms of, do you think it is a new thing for the Vikings to have dissension between Zimmer and the front office?
You know, I don't think so, because, you know, in the past, I mean, I think that they are on the same page in a lot of respects. I mean, the fact that they drafted a cornerback at 30, that's got a defensive head coach who wants his secondary to be the best in the league and to continue having the success that it did. That has his fingerprints all over that. Because otherwise you would have gone with the most obvious need, which was filling your spot at right guard. And, you know, we can talk about that till we're blue in the face. I mean, I think part of it too was that the guys that they wanted just were not there at 30, and they didn't really have a great backup plan.
Right.
So that's why they fell short. But, you know, Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer have been tied together since Zimmer got here in 2014. And to me, it kind of feels like they, you know, if one does one thing, I mean, they're on the same page about a lot of things. You know, I don't know if the offensive coordinator was one that I don't know if they were really on the same page through and through. Certainly doesn't feel that way. But, you know, in terms of draft decisions, I mean, I think that Mike Zimmer has a very heavy say in how his roster is constructed, and that, you know, both he and Rick Spielman are, you know, very much tied together by a lot of the decisions that are made, good and bad.
So let's say the Vikings do miss the playoffs, which is not out of the question at the moment, given that they're 6-6-1. Our football power index projects them with a 69.6% chance of making the postseason. So still favored, but not exactly the sort of lock you would have figured before the year. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, do you think there will be more significant changes, or will they just kind of run it back and say, well, we got the OC problem wrong, and maybe we address the offensive line come the 2020 offseason, 2019 offseason, excuse me?
No, I think that you absolutely have to have more changes. If this team misses the playoffs, it comes down to what was the root issue here? Why were they never in position in certain games against really good opponents? Is that your quarterback? Is that your offensive line? I mean, that's a front office thing. I think that comes into criticism the most. And, you know, in my opinion, Mike Zimmer, Rick Spielman, you know, the entire staff is probably on the hot seat if they miss the playoffs here because, you know, money talks. I mean, you spent $84 million on Kirk Cousins to get you to this point. You're not going to bench him. You're not going to fire him, essentially. It's got to fall on the decision makers and the people calling the plays and the people, you know, getting the players to execute every single week. And that lack of execution, if that's what it comes down to, where they miss the playoffs here, I don't think that will be taken lightly at all.
Do you think that's warranted? Like, do you think that they should make major changes if they don't make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it has to be because you look at the situation right now, and that's why I've always been a proponent that Kirk Cousins is not going to win a Super Bowl here in his first season in Minnesota, but you got to be able to do more than just beat the Jets and beat Arizona. Like, you have to win games that actually matter. And, you know, I think that's, you know, that it would just make complete sense as to if they miss the playoffs, trying to find, okay, maybe it's best that they, you know, that they put people on the hot seat and really take a cold, hard look at the philosophy and the direction this team is going, because I don't think you can just blame it on the offensive coordinator. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who feel like John DeFilippo was the fall guy at a critical time, and they're warranted to think that, because it wasn't just on him. The offense did not falter entirely because of the offensive coordinator. There's a lot of different factors in that, from the front office to the quarterback tasked with executing the plays. That, you know, if it does boil down to they lose some really critical games here down the stretch and they don't make the playoffs, I mean, this ownership has kind of been known to swing the way of the fan base and really listen to that heavily. And I think there will be some very unhappy people if that's the case. And that might lead to, you know, coaches being put into positions that they didn't think they'd be in this year.
So, Courtney, let me finish with this. Obviously, I think if the Vikings went back, given what's happened, I don't think they would hire John DeFilippo to be their offensive coordinator this offseason. Do you think if they could go back and they could replay this offseason again and they had the same opportunity to sign Kirk Cousins for $28 million a year, do you think they would go back and re-sign Kirk Cousins and just sort of hope it goes better the next time? Or do you think they would make a change and approach the offseason differently?
If they knew they were not going to address the offensive line back then, and I don't know if we'll ever really know that. If they wanted Frank Ragnow. That is who they wanted. That was not a secret. That is who they wanted to get at 30. Well, Detroit picked him at 20. So what are you supposed to do in that situation? There were other guys, the run on interior offensive linemen that Rick Spielman talked about. Are you surprised they went that quickly? Well, you know, that's something that you have to be prepared for, in my opinion. So if you knew that you weren't going to address the offensive line to protect Kirk Cousins so we could have that 2016 success, then I don't think you sign him. But in you know, playing devil's advocate here, the market commanded it. Quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins, you know, proven veteran quarterback. I mean, he's a 3-year starter. It's not like this is, you know, Brock Osweiler that we're talking about. And I mean, he got his own. He has those, you know, issues in leaving teams empty-handed for the amount of money that he was paid. But I do think that the market commanded them to pay Kirk Cousins what they did. Otherwise, the Jets would have done it, and you don't ever want to be in that situation where you're like, well, we could have had this guy, and who we have right now is not cutting it. Do I think Kirk Cousins would have done much better with the Jets? I don't know. I kind of doubt it. I think the Jets are in their own state of turmoil because of other issues. But, you know, there's a number of different circumstances that I factor in there. It's not just a yes or no question as to, okay, if we knew it was going to play out this way, do we still sign him? I could see an argument for yes. I could more heavily, though, see an argument for no and thinking, okay, we bring Case Keenum back, we can sign two other offensive linemen, and we can give ourselves a chance here the next few years to not have to put as much stress on the salary cap and not have to worry about, you know, a Super Bowl window that's so tight as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's hardly out of the question. It's obviously a extremely difficult thing. And I don't, you know, it's not as if they were the only team that wanted Kirk Cousins. And if it wasn't for them offering Kirk Cousins $28 million a year, you know, he would have had to settle for a 1-year deal for $15 million. Like, it was a, there was a market. I mean, he did take less money for the Vikings than he did from the Jets. And I agreed with the move. I thought it was a smart move. They didn't have to give up any picks for a quarterback. And people don't really price that in typically when you're thinking about how valuable or how much it costs to get a quarterback like Kirk Cousins. So, I don't know. It's a extremely difficult thing, and I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer, but clearly it hasn't worked for the Vikings this year. Well, Courtney, obviously, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Still more to be decided with the Vikings, and where can people check out more of the work you're doing on the Minnesota Vikings here for ESPN?
No, of course. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Do you want to plug your various social media properties? Like, where should people check out more of the work you're doing?
Well, you can go to ESPN.com and click on the Minnesota Vikings tab on the NFL page, or you can follow me on Twitter at Courtney R. Cronin, and I typically tweet out all of my articles there and offer all of my hot takes. So, and there's some flaming ones nowadays. So they're so hot your computer might burn. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, that's where you can find me the most, and I'm also on Instagram at Courtney R. Cronin.
Awesome. Well, Courtney, thank you so much. We're going to come back here with more Bill Barnwell Show in a moment. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell. Again, still Thursday, December 13th, and I am joined now to talk about the Patriots game from last week. Pretty quiet, uneventful game. Nothing exciting really happened there. And the Patriots-Steelers game coming up this weekend with our old pal ESPN's Mike Reese. Mike, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing great. How's everything going?
It's great. I'm here in Bristol, Connecticut, just enjoying a beautiful, snowy day. I'm sure the weather is fantastic up in New England as well. But we have a really interesting time of the season for the Pats here, where, of course, we'll talk about the Steelers game that's coming up in a moment. But last week, we all saw what happened against the Dolphins in a place that has been sort of a disaster for the Patriots in recent years. They lose to Miami on a last-second laterals play, probably, you know, the play of the year in the NFL, and usually the Patriots are not on the opposite side of the play of the year. I mean, in terms of your coverage of the Patriots, is this the most frustrating regular season loss you've seen for New England?
Well, it's definitely got to be right up near the top, Bill. I mean, it's just so unusual to see a Bill Belichick coach team, you know, be on the other side of that. I mean, this is what they pride themselves on, the situational football, and, you know, game comes down to one play. That's what Bill Belichick always says, and to not have the right personnel on the field is stunning. And yeah, it sort of really sets it up, Bill, for, like, that's really the story of the week. It's how do they respond to something that's just so uncharacteristic of them?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, this is sort of the thing. This is like you figure the Patriots would do this on the other side of things. They would take advantage of a mismatch substitution. It wouldn't be a play where, for example, another team had their best safety off the field for one snap, and it happened to be the most important snap of the game, and the Patriots were the one taking advantage of a team that perhaps inexplicably in some ways had a tight end playing safety on the final play of the game. I mean, is it, you know, do you think there is a long-lasting impact on this? Do you think anything really changes in the long run for the Patriots, or is it just, you know, just the confluence of bad things happening for one awful play at exactly the wrong time, and the yeah, Patriots are going to have forgotten about it by the time we get to Sunday?
Well, it is a tough, I mean, that's a tough question to answer, Bill, because, I mean, I want to see how they do respond. Now, I would say historically, like, this has been one of the, I call it a foundational principle of Bill Belichick's program here, is that they do a great job in terms of turning the page. And that goes from everything to Super Bowl championship victories, where, you know, it was last year in training camp where I remember Bill Belichick saying, look, we're done with the parades, like no more. Like it's time to move on, mm-hmm, you know, to these tough losses like, you know, 2007 when your undefeated season ends in the Super Bowl, you know, and to come back the next year and to have, you know, an 11-5 season. So they've historically been able to turn the page on thrilling wins, devastating losses, but every year is different, you know, and who knows really how this team will respond. My sense is they'll respond favorably because, you know, I think it's a good locker room. I think they have good people in there and good players, but it's not like it's an easy spot, you know, going to Pittsburgh, a team that in many ways is very desperate. It sort of sets up a very interesting situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers for playoff leverage when it comes to Brian Burke's tweet every week about, you know, how much each week matters to a given team and their chances of making the postseason. The Patriots are basically still all set. It could impact their seeding, of course, in the long run, losing to the Dolphins last week. But basically, they're pretty much a lock to get to the postseason, even if they lose again to the Steelers this week. Whereas Pittsburgh, on the other hand, I mean, this is a team that I think their playoff leverage is over 40%, so a 40% swing or more between them making and missing the playoffs, not just, you know, being in the playoffs, but missing it altogether if they lose to the Patriots this week. So how do you think the Patriots sort of maneuver that, where you have a team that is absolutely not only a very talented team in the Steelers, but absolutely desperate to win this football game and stay in the playoff hunt in the AFC?
So for the Patriots, it's I'm really glad you mentioned those numbers because, you know, even if they go out there and lose, which, you know, I think how the game unfolds will be important to the Patriots. You know, like you said, they can lose and they're probably still going to be in the playoffs. They're in very good position. But what they need to do, Bill, like for them, is they need to play a complete game. Like, even if they lose, but they play a very complete game, like, they need a performance that they can feel good about, like 60 minutes. And what's so interesting about this team this year is that they've shown these flashes of, wow, they could be great, and yet they've also been wildly inconsistent, where 1 week your defense looks great, and then the next week, you know, they can't stop the run. And I just feel like for them, you know, positioning themselves for when they get into the playoffs, to have the, you know, a good, solid road game, complete performance would mean a lot to them. Just to knowing that in the playoffs, they might have to go on the road to win a big game. And I think to me, that is their focus in this game. It's just put it together so you can go into the playoffs saying, if we have to put it together in the playoffs, we've shown we can do it in a very challenging environment to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like they have to prove it more to themselves in a way, you know, than prove it to the rest of the league. I think everyone still thinks the Patriots are still going to be in the running, you know, come January. But of course, this is a situation where they're playing for home field advantage in a lot of ways, and they don't want to necessarily, you know, have to go and travel to Kansas City in the postseason. It looks like they're going to have to, unless Kansas City takes a real step backwards over the final couple of weeks of the year. Is there something you want to see from them specifically over the final 3 weeks? Obviously, getting over what happened is one thing, and giving an impressive performance against the Steelers is another. But is there some element of their play or some player or some concept that you want to see them show some mastery over or some success over the final few weeks of the year?
Well, yes, and I would say that run defense, after what we saw last week, is where I would start. You know, the Dolphins had 189 yards rushing, most the Patriots have given up this year, and it was how they gave them up, Bill, and it's all, you know, and you're so great at this, like looking deeper at the game, like it's all about the matchup. So, you know, Miami's a big three wide receiver team, a lot of, you know, one back, one tight end, three receivers. And so the Patriots, really, in recent years, against teams that sort of major in that personnel grouping, they like to play a nickel package with three safeties. And, you know, I always try to simplify it, you know, when talking about the strategy. And the Patriots basically are saying, look, we'll go light in the box, six up front, five in the back with the three safeties. But in doing that, we're still stout enough against the run, you know, and we're helping ourselves in the passing game. It's almost like this sort of middle ground defense for them. Well, it can't be a middle ground defense if you can't hold up against the run, you know, in your big nickel package and spin it forward to the Steelers. And, you know, I think they like to play a lot of three wide receiver offense, you know, and so I'm thinking along the lines of, if I'm Bill Belichick and Brian Flores, their defensive play caller, you know, what's my confidence level going to my big nickel in this game?
Okay.
You know, like, they had to go to their base defense in the second half last week to add a little more bulk up front, a little more power, a little more size. And they basically went back to like the most simple base defense, you know, in the second half. And so, to me, that's sort of what I want to see. Like, one, are they going to go back to that big nickel? And two, if they do, you know, can they be more stout against the run?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you think about the teams they're going to play come January. The Chiefs are a team that's going to spend a lot of time in their three wide sets. They're going to try and stretch them and force the Patriots to, you know, match up against those teams when they want to have three wide receivers on the field. The Steelers, again, could be a team they play again come January. Hardly out of the question. Same sort of thing. The Chargers spend a fair amount of time in three wide as well. They could be a team that comes out. And then, of course, look on the other side of the bracket, the Saints, the Rams, two teams that, especially the Rams, are going to be in three wide almost every single snap. So obviously a place where they have to really excel over the final few weeks and into the postseason. What about Rob Gronkowski? I mean, obviously, I think to some extent it's unfair for us to watch what happened on that play and see him, you know, struggle to move laterally and make a tackle in the open field against Kenyon Drake. At the same time, obviously, it's not his position, not what he's paid to do. So not surprised that he didn't look great in that situation, but how do you think he looks overall heading into the postseason? Yeah. And do you think they need a healthy and effective Gronk to play at the level we're accustomed to from the Patriots offense?
So, you know, for me, Bill, I give him a total pass on that last play, you know, in the game. Like, I wouldn't expect him to look good against Kenyon Drake or just trying to tackle in general. Like, he shouldn't have been on the field. And so I'm giving him a pass on that. I would say offensively, you know, he's not vintage Gronk, which is, when I say vintage Gronk, what I think of is a guy that's carrying multiple defenders as he's lunging to the end zone. He's, you know, consistently drawing, you know, attention from multiple defenders. That is happening at times, but it looks different to me is what I'm trying to say this year. But I would say that, let's say it's 75% of what maybe it was at vintage Gronk level. I think a 75% Gronkowski is still a very good Gronkowski and is still making the Patriots better when he's on the field than when he's not on the field, you know, compared to the alternative of Dwayne Allen or Jacob Hollister at that position or a whole different grouping. So they do need him, in my opinion. And it's just, I would say it's probably unrealistic based on what we've seen at this point to expect 100% of Gronk, that vintage Gronk that we've seen in the past. But what he's given him, at least what he gave him last week, I mean, that was some good production in the passing game. 8 targets, 8 catches, over 100 yards, first red zone touchdown of the season. You know, they need that. They definitely need that, Bill.
Yeah, I just, you know, I mean, the numbers with Tom Brady, they've dropped off consistently without Rob Gronkowski being on the field. And certainly we've seen when he's been less than 100%, you think back to that Super Bowl years ago against the Giants where he tried to play with a high ankle sprain and he was not his usual self. I mean, it's possible, I feel like, for them to win without Gronk. They have the receivers, they have the running game when things are clicking, but I do think it's going to be tough for them to be at the highest possible level without Gronkowski. Yeah. I think in a season where, you know, you might be in a shootout again with the Chiefs, you kind of need Gronk for that big play. And you saw what happened in that Chiefs game, actually, where the final two possessions of the game and they needed those big plays, the person they turned to was Gronk for two big plays to move the ball. So it's a really interesting team. And that I don't know if there are any great teams in the NFL this year. And the Patriots are... There are times where they look like their ceiling is higher than anybody else's in the league, and you sort of figure they're going to figure things out and sort of click as you get to the postseason. But you know, we're still seeing hiccups, and I don't know necessarily what I would expect from them in the postseason. And I guess interested to hear what you think in that in terms of, you know, were you expecting them to kind of have it figured out by now, where they weren't going to have a game like the game they had against the Dolphins last week, or was it just sort of, you know, maybe that idea that they figure out things as the season goes on, that concept is overrated and not necessarily accurate.
You know, it's so interesting. I mean, part of it for Miami, you almost like put a little asterisk next to it, only because that's always, for whatever reason, been a tough place for them, right? Like, not to dismiss it, because you can't do that. I also look at it, Bill, from a standpoint of, like, if they just make the last play, which is, you know, incredible of what happened, like the whole, I shouldn't say the whole narrative of what we're talking about, but I do believe the discussion would be shifted significantly, you know? And so I go back to something Tom Brady said early in the season in one of his radio interviews. And he said, it's usually not till week 10 that you know what you really have in your team, you know? And I think back to that because at week 10 this year, they didn't know. And I would almost say at week 15, I'm not sure they really know. And so there's two points of thought here. One is, well, you just answered your own question. you know what you have. You're an inconsistent team that hasn't put it together, you know, or the other side. And I'm not sure which one I have to be honest with you that I lean toward is they've had, you know, the moving parts at the start of the year without Julian Edelman on the suspension, you know, bringing Josh Gordon in, you know, via trade, Gronkowski in and out of the lineup, Rex Burkhead coming off injured reserve, that you haven't really had the team that you're working with now for an extended period of time to know what you had. And do you know what I mean, Bill? So mm-hmm. it's almost like maybe it is. This is like maybe what they are. It's just an unusual year that they haven't figured it out yet. But like I would just say, like if we talk next week, I wouldn't be shocked if they're coming off their best game of the year, mm-hmm. that they finally put it together. So I'm thinking there's still a little margin that we got to leave for them here before we maybe write the final chapter.
Yeah, of course. I think that's the smart, reasonable take, which I it's the reason you come on the show. It's the reason I respect your work so much. I absolutely makes sense to me. You think about the Steelers on the flip side of this. A few weeks ago, they were 6-2-1. They just beat the Ravens. They've blown out the Panthers by 31 points on Thursday Night Football. And everyone was kind of sitting there and saying, wow, you know, this team, I mean, they're scary. You know, they're absolutely, nobody's going to want to play them come the postseason. In the next four games, they narrowly beat the Jags in the final play of the game, or basically the final play of the game, lose three straight games to the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Raiders. Two of those teams are not exactly incredibly scary competition. I think it's fair to say the Raiders were the most gruesome loss, of course. Now, the next 2 weeks, they play the Patriots. They're at the Saints. They could miss the playoffs entirely. I mean, do you think we, you know, whether it's Patriots fans, whether it's us as fans of the game as a whole, I mean, do you think we react too much from week to week and sort of get caught up in, like, you know, what we just saw most recently as the best measure of a team's performance?
Yeah, that's a great point, Bill. And I think part of it's the fun of it. And let's not forget, like, we want to have fun. Like, why else are we doing it, right? Like, and so it is fun to see a game and react. And, I mean, I go back to sort of that game with the Rams and the Chiefs on Monday night, right? Everyone's talking about, oh, it's all about offense mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And then, you know, you come and you see the Rams go into Chicago and, you know, the defense wins the day, mm-hmm. right? So I do think we do react. And I think that, you know, part of that's like I would hate to see that go away because that truly is part of the fun of what we do. It's reacting to what we saw. But if we don't do it in the context of it's a long grind, you know, and things can change from week to week in this league in an instant. And, you know, I think if you can mix the two, that's probably the best place to be. But we wouldn't be human, you know, if we didn't get swayed in one direction or the other, you know, from time to time.
I mean, I think it's tough. And I know I struggle with it too. And I think the flip side of it, of course, is that there are times where teams actually do change and make a major drop off. And I think if you're, you know, I think for me, I'm the kind of person where I am pretty hesitant to make changes and sort of shift the way I view teams. And you kind of miss it. You kind of get stuck behind and you don't catch up to the new information. It's a tough balance, but I think it's, like you said, I think it's human nature. I think when you see what happened to the Patriots on Sunday, I mean, even if you don't think, well, the Patriots are doomed and Belichick needs to get fired and Gronk needs to, you know, get traded or obviously, like, that's a little extreme, but I think it is natural to sort of look at that and be like, okay, well, maybe it's not our year. Maybe it's just not meant to be with the Patriots, but we've seen it. I mean, this is it's a really fascinating team. And I think it's one of the rare cases where we've had a big enough sample when it comes to Belichick, Brady, and the Patriots as a whole, that we've seen so many things happen to them and them sort of go through so many different struggles and then figure things out and be fine by the end of the year.
That's right. And you know, I want to tell a quick story, Bill, that mm-hmm. I just remember from when I first started covering the league, you know, back in like the mid to late 90s. And the Patriots had a cornerback who had played for Carolina. I think his name was Steve Lofton. I should have it off the top of my head, but he was like a nickel corner.
I forgive you.
And, you know, he played for Dom Capers. And he said to me, I said, give me some advice, you know, as a young reporter, like what do I need to know? And he said, for him, one of the things Dom Capers once told him was like, this league has so many ups and downs and twists and turns that the best way to approach things is to keep as even of a keel mm-hmm. as you can. Like, don't ride the roller coaster, you know, to go so far up because then the down will be such a crash. And I think that sort of ties into what we're talking about here. You know, like 1 week it can be a really, really gut-wrenching loss like the Patriots had. But, you know, if they come back and beat Pittsburgh, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to go so high that you're sort of – it's so volatile. You just try to keep it right in that middle ground, and that's usually a fairly good place to be.
I think it is, too. And I think that It makes total sense. By the way, it was Steve Lofton. You were correct.
Yes.
Was the 1997 Patriots. Or 98 Patriots. He played 10 games over 2 years for the 97 and 98 Patriots.
2 decades ago. How about that, pulling that out? Oh, and I was like, should I do it? Should I do it? And then you had my back. See, that's great teamwork right there. That was like a combo block there. I loved it.
I quote-unquote did my job by trying to back you up. Well, Mike, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. Where can people check out all the stuff you do covering the Patriots?
Well, ESPN, we have so many great platforms. As you know, right on ESPN.com, every team has its page. I'm a Patriots page. And then you can go ESPNBoston.com if you want to go right for all the Boston stuff. And then on Twitter, it's at Mike Reese. It's R-E-I-S-S, two S's on the end as in Sam.
Awesome. Well, Mike, we will have you back on, I'm assuming, everything goes right during the postseason to talk more Patriots. But thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Look forward to it, Bill. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much to our guests today, Courtney Cronin and Mike Reese, both of ESPN. Obviously, two teams who are in interesting situations, I think it's fair to say, after rough losses last week. But two teams I think we'll probably end up seeing in January. It could be teams that are scary on January. Just a quick reminder, I should mention this more frequently. I don't. If you like the show, and I hope that you do if you're listening to this part of the show, that's pretty much the ending, I'd ask that you just rate us, review us on iTunes. Subscribing is always great. Stuff like that just lets people know who are important that you're enjoying the show and will allow me to keep doing it. So I appreciate that, and more audio coming for you guys next week.